This is Live from the Table, recording at the world-famous Comedy Cellar. Coming at you on Sirius XM 99 Raw Dog and on the Laugh Button Podcast Network. This is Dan Natterman. With me, Periel Ashenbrandt, our producer, who is also an on-air personality. Things evolved in that direction, and it's kind of too late to turn back now. We also have with us Dove Davidoff, Comedy Cellar regular, also has been on the podcast many, many times. I do want to mention that Noam Dorman is not here for reasons unknown. We hope it's nothing serious. It likely is not. Noam will drop this podcast for any reason. Because it's really not committed to it.
What a great intro.
Those who are longtime listeners know that Noam's devotion to this podcast is...
It's questionable.
Questionable at best. One wonders why he does it every week. In any case, welcome, Dove.
Yes, sir.
And Dove, let me introduce you to Nicole Lyons, who is our sound person, I guess.
Hello, Nicole.
Audiologist.
Hello.
Is that what they call it, an audiologist?
That's what I call it.
I think
an audiologist is when you go to the doctor and they go beep, and you raise your left hand, and then beep, and they raise your right hand.
It's an audiology exam.
I think that's what an audiology income free.
Audiology income freed.
In any case, Nicole, is this the first time you've met Dove?
Maybe just once casually on the pod, but other than that, I don't think.
Now,
sure. I can't see.
Nicole doesn't say a lot. She prefers just to be behind the scenes.
Of course, and she is actually behind them physically for the.
But if you have a question, Nicole, you can feel free to ask. Dove, it's been a minute, as they say, as the kids say.
As the kids say, a minute. But you never know what they mean by that.
Well, a minute depends on. The context.
Context in how you're saying it, in the relationship they're in.
Right. If you see somebody every day and you haven't seen them in two days, you might say it could be a minute. But it has been a minute since you've been on this podcast. Keep us up or get us up to speed on the life
of... Up to speed. You know, listen, I don't know. I mean, I can't just wander on about people that we know in common because Dan and I have known each other a long time, but... You know, in terms of what might be engaging to a viewer, I mean, I've been on the road, but I've been seeing somebody much younger than I am. I'm 48 and she's 22, and I didn't go looking for somebody of that vintage. But in experiencing the kind, well, in having the consideration around what people, where judgment is generated around that gap. And how I would feel if it were somebody I knew that were much older seeing someone younger. I don't know. I mean, how do you guys want to initiate the conversation? It's like, one, I would imagine people see it in the liability column as if you are the manipulative type, then you have that much more leverage, experience, and wisdom in which to use to manipulate and or whatever it is that you're into. On the other hand, one could make an argument for it being... reasonably healthy if you have your shit together and, you know, you've been in therapy and read some books and you're a reasonably decent person. Would it be better if a 22-year-old were dating a 25-year-old skateboarder with an opiate problem? I mean, what is necessarily better about dating in one's...
So-called age appropriate.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't faze me at all. I mean, of course...
No, it doesn't. And that's another thing. It's a demographic thing. So two of my five friends are 25 years older than their partner. So you got Brian Callen and you have Sandy Marks. Both of them are in that range. So it's not uncommon in a certain demographic. And if you saw a man in a movie that had less than 20 years between him and his wife, and, you know, if it's Tom Cruise, you'd wonder what was going on, why the old broad was with him. And so there's a cultural, I found it to be an interesting area to mine comedically because it seems as though there is a cultural hypocrisy and then a demographic kind of, you know, there's a certain type of person that would be more judgmental around that than another. And then there's the gender differences. And so it's not just about me. It's a comedically rich area because... As women age, they, whether or not they want to date younger because of probably genetic, you know.
Wait, so you're saying that if the woman were that much older?
Well, look, I don't have any problem with it. I just think it's unlikely that she's going to get a guy that much younger. You know what I mean? It just it doesn't usually work that way for whatever reason. I don't. Doesn't matter to me. Date away.
Well, Marcus Monroe is in that situation where his wife is, and he discussed it on our show, so it's not secret, but his wife is about 15 years older than he is. He actually has a step-grandchild.
I don't know.
That's fascinating.
Is it a step-grandchild?
Yeah, her grandchild, and they're married, so it's his step-grandchild.
But I should also mention that she stopped drinking at 19 or 20. And so maybe in the joke, you know, that makes us the same age emotionally or something, but... It's a very different dynamic when someone went hard. And then if you've had parallels in your life where you both lost your father young and they're these psychological, that being said, you know, there's a big age difference and it's,
And is it something that like you're aware of?
It isn't pop culture. I know what you mean. Like references. Do you feel alone when you're with the person?
No, because I think that when you connect with somebody, you connect with them, and those things within the context of the relationship don't matter.
I think you're right. And I think some of the judgment comes from men who habitually look for somebody really young. Like, I'm not standing in front of a bus station, you know. Like,
you're not?
This girl's got her mother. Yeah, exactly. Picking up girls on their way in with no return ticket.
At Port Authority?
Yeah, short dress. You know, come on home. Hey, baby. No, you know, I mean, her mother got her MBA at Harvard. It's like, you know, she's not a... Didn't just fall off a bus. I don't know, you know.
Well,
in my specific situation, but I think opening up to the larger consideration perhaps is of some engaging, you know, it's an interesting area.
Well, were I to date a girl that much younger, I would make sure to wear a tweed jacket and smoke a pipe just because why not push
right.
it as far
right
as it will
the,
go?
Right to the edge of the envelope.
And I would say, now, honey,
dear,
you know, we're not going to the club tonight.
No.
I gave you those books to read.
Yeah, that's right. And if you didn't read them, you know, there'll be a price to pay.
We're going to the Honeycutt's tonight for a dinner. I gave you some reading material so that you will be able to converse. Don't embarrass me.
Oh, that's good stuff.
The only problem I can see with it is if it's a long-term thing, if you're planning marriage or whatever, then you'll be an old man shitting himself, and she'll still be wanting to go to discotheque.
Well, not necessarily, though. Look, you know, nothing's guaranteed. Look,
nothing is guaranteed.
Bob Saget's wife was, you know, significantly younger than he was.
Yes, and that's exactly the point. And he's,
because he died quite young. Yeah. I mean,
well, it wasn't quite young. He died.
65 isn't quite young to die.
It's young to die. It's not quite young to die.
Oh, God.
It's young to die. He died too young.
I know what you mean.
Was it quite young? No. Quite young would be 50 and under.
Okay, fine. I can tell you this. That was not when I was in my 20s. I dated several guys who were significantly older than I was, and I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a reason why that sort of trope, or you know, if you want to call it
trope,
that,
is the perfect word. People misuse the word trope, but trope is exactly.
How are we defining trope?
Well, trope is something like you see in the movies a lot, like themes that come up in pop culture.
So
it's
I got
a common
that right.
Theme,
I
right?
got
it's
that
a common
right.
theme in like pop culture.
Yeah.
So we see you go to the
I
movie.
Got that right.
So I fucked up quite young, but I got trope right.
Well, quite is more subjective.
That's correct.
trope has an actual definition.
But there's a reason. I mean, there's something really sexy and appealing about that goes in both directions, I think, in sort of in opposite ways, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you like younger girls too, don't
well,
you?
Well, no. well, first of all, younger girls, they're certainly attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But as I get older, what's young is changing.
Right.
So now 35 is young.
Well, 35 is young.
But well, it wasn't when I was 25.
Right.
I was 25. It was a dried up old prune.
Right. Or a MILF.
But for me, the two issues are, one of the main issues is also I just don't like people looking at me weird.
But they do that anyway.
Well,
don't they?
I don't want to exacerbate the issue. Right. Yeah. And so people looking at you and you know, and do you spend any time with her friends? And is that awkward if you do?
No, one friend with her friend was dating an older guy. No, it's really not that awkward for me, but I don't lead a particularly fragile life in that context, right? If you're a politician, if you're the head of a company, and there's some sort of corporate veneer within which you have to kind of, you know, fit in order to not ruffle feathers, and there are real stakes associated with those social circumstances, I don't live in that world.
That's a very good point.
You know, nobody's looking at me twice when in most of the rooms that I go into. I don't, you know, I mean, so there is also, no price for me to pay in that
regard.
Also,
you don't look... There are people your age that do look quite older.
Yeah, no, some of, you know, if you keep yourself in reasonably good condition, you know, that actually never occurred to me. I was more thinking about what is the actual argument. Like, there are many demographics wherein it's relatively common. But for people that experience a kind of a judgment, like, I mean, even me,
what
if I had a daughter.
What kind of judgment? Right.
You know, if I had a daughter, I'd be like, what the fuck are you like?
Yeah. But which is legit.
I think it's legit. But then if you go further into that consideration, I think it's about there being too much liability associated with the leverage that an older man
Yeah, I think
have.
The potential.
It's a shithead.
But on the other hand, when you look at people that murder, you know, that get murdered by their husbands or their boyfriends, they're usually age appropriate.
Oh, that's good.
Often age appropriate. That's right.
So, you know, I mean, an older man is going
to
be less
likely to murder your daughter.
Yeah, you know, he has a bad back.
He's got a bad back. You can chase him around this fireplace and hit him with the thing.
With the andiron. Yeah. So yes, there's a potential for, but there is a psychological manipulation. I think the big problem is, I'll just reiterate, is that, as a practical matter, if she wants to have kids and you're too old, or if she's 50 and still, you know, viable, wants to do things, and you're, you know, 75 and in a wheelchair, I mean,
Jesus Christ.
Well, that could happen. I mean, it's more likely. Obviously, you're playing the other. There are 100-year-olds that are still bicycling every day, and there are 50-year-olds that drop dead. Understood. We're talking about odds here.
But for the love of God, I mean, you could walk out on the street and get hit by a car.
I just said about a second ago, we're playing the odds. So if I had a daughter, I would say you want to marry this older gentleman, fine. But think about the life you want, and if you want to have kids, and if you've already, maybe he already has kids, you know, and doesn't want more kids and all these
things. Sure, all of those things are considerations, for sure. In fact, it was why one of my relationships didn't work out, because he wanted to get married and have kids, and I didn't, with good reason, and I did anyway. No, I'm just kidding. But no, but really, because he was significantly older than I was. But
in this case, he's the one that wanted kids. So you were at different places in your life.
Correct. Right. That's right.
Perielle's wearing, by the way, her sweatshirt says Perielle in huge...
Oh, that's cool. I just saw that.
Huge black embroidered letters. Perry. Yeah, cool. She's like Laverne.
Laverne
DeFazio always had an L on her shirts. And Perry has a lot of... she has earrings
cool
that say Perielle.
That's a cool look. You look good.
How many articles of clothing do you have that say Perielle?
As many as I can, because when I was growing up, it was all I wanted, because everything said Jennifer and Ashley.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And I just wanted something with my name on it.
Yeah, why not? And then you end up writing a book. Nobody could take that away from you.
It's true.
Is that a made-up name, or is it a actual name?
My mom made this up. It's transliterated to Periel from the Hebrew. In Hebrew, it's Periel, and it means fruit of God. But in English, you can't pronounce
so
the R. That's right. Very sweet.
So sweet.
By the way, I got your email, Dan, of that list of things to translate into Hebrew.
Right.
I got it.
Okay. Perry and I were having I wouldn't say an argument. It was more like me berating her. I questioned her proficiency in Hebrew.
Of course.
But I don't want to get into that now.
Dan's a professional linguist. You know,
not a professional linguist.
He consistently challenges.
He's got a tremendous ear for
language. Not that I have a tremendous ear. I've spent 20 years studying French. I know exactly what it takes.
Yes.
To achieve a certain level in the language. And French is easy compared to Hebrew. And, it's hard for me to believe that Perielle has assimilated the monstrous amount of vocabulary.
Right. To really facilitate nuance.
To really be Perielle
in
another language.
And
because I know what it took for me to get to the level of French that I've gotten. And French is easy, relatively
and I've
speaking.
Consistently explained.
In other words, I every single day I probably watch 2 hours of French on television.
Wow.
If I read a book, it's almost always going to be in French. Wow. If I see a movie on Netflix, it's always going to be in French. And this has been going on for decades. So if you're telling me that you're not doing this,
right,
and unless you're a genius, and Hebrew's so difficult, I have to be skeptical.
So does it worry you that possibly I'm much more intelligent than you give me credit for, and that sort of makes you feel a little bit insecure?
No, that doesn't worry me because, however, and even... No, it doesn't worry me because even intelligent people to assimilate... I mean, Hebrew, Dove, is monstrously difficult.
To be very challenging.
Like, I mean, just words like... So many words... Yeah. That are freebies in English.
And aren't the mechanics of reading from right to left?
Well, that's not the difficulty. The difficulty
That is actually difficult. But here's
the difficulty would be like if you wanted to say, you know, progressive in French, you'd say progressive and you'd be done.
Yes.
International, you know, division.
It's a romance line.
It's and there's thousands of these words.
Yes, understood.
Problematic.
Ah, oui.
Bayati in Hebrew.
What's that?
Bayati
is what?
In Hebrew. Problematic.
Well, I'll have to take your word. You know.
But the thing is that you realize...
Construction.
Yes, construction, of course. Yeah.
You know. Destruction. Yeah, well, destruction.
Champagne. Yes, of course.
And it goes on and on and on. Whereas in Hebrew, every single one of these words would be some ridiculous word that
totally
would be
barely relationship.
So that's why I say...
But you're missing a huge part of this, which is if you grow up speaking a language...
Yeah, but you grew up with... But you grew up with what exactly?
Hebrew.
No, your parents are American.
My mother is Israeli.
But your father is American.
My father is American.
I've just known so many people. And I know people who both their parents come from a particular country. And they don't speak the language. They're raised in America. Yes, they don't speak the language.
Happened all the time.
I'm sorry to disappoint
so,
you.
So you're telling me one parent is native Hebrew speaker.
Correct.
It just doesn't correspond to my experience.
Well, then it must be impossible if it doesn't.
No, it's not impossible. I just have to say I'm skeptical. Okay.
I'm going to invite you over.
I want to hear
for a Shabbat dinner
conversation, a long, involved conversation,
right,
about a nuanced topic.
Okay. Noam Chomsky.
I don't want to hear. It is nice out today.
No.
How is your mother? My mother is fine. What's
Pass
your
the
name?
Chicken.
Yeah. I have
been living in New York since 3 years.
Where's the bathroom?
And you? I have been living in New York since 3 years also.
What am I going to get when I just decimate this fucking idiotic notion of yours? I'm about
you'll
to call my husband.
You'll get a free
and have like a whole conversation in Hebrew.
I won't really know what the conversation is. I need to have an independent arbiter,
okay.
And then and if you speak to my satisfaction, you will get dinner for two at an Israeli restaurant on the Upper West Side.
Okay.
I'm going to bring in Esty to referee.
Oh, I can just have a conversation with her.
Essie grew up in Poland, and then
she grew up
from a young age.
She was born in Poland.
You're right.
But
I think
her strong
young enough that yes.
I'll find somebody.
Understood.
Maybe that guy that owns the WA.
Could be the WA.
These Israelis are everywhere.
Here's the thing that I want to say. I do think that
we're getting back to the younger.
Yeah, I'm not saying that this is you.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that you can objectively understand.
I can.
Why someone would say that there is some. And of course, this isn't true for everyone.
No, but overall,
but
I get
that
it.
Like there's some
power differential.
Yeah, there's that's exactly right. There's some power dynamic.
Yeah. No, but that all adds up. That was sort of part of my consideration. I was really just interested in the real kind of what is the actual argument?
The moral
other than
argument.
The moral argument, other than the general logistics, which are, of course, somebody could be 75, they're more likely to die than somebody who's 50, and that could leave them stranded, or there could be, different objectives in terms of child rearing and whether or not somebody's too old, too young. Now, that being said, I was dating before her a 38-year-old software executive, and she would, I would imagine, since she was interested in having children, she would want to have them much sooner, which would have been a challenge for me than somebody. You have more time with someone who's younger. That could go both ways, but certainly it could, any of those logistical, actual chronological elements could create an issue. I was wondering what the moral consideration.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. Nicole, if you have anything to say, you can jump in. You're a woman, a 20-something woman, So. Right, woman, yeah.
Yeah, baby, sure.
If you have anything to say, you're certainly welcome to do so.
I don't, but thank you for asking.
Okay. Yeah, as a moral consideration, I think you're on very shaky ground if you're taking an anti-position, yeah. morally speaking. Right. Yes, there's the potential for manipulation, but of course you can manipulate, you know, a very good-looking, wealthy 30-year-old can be manipulative.
And so the judgment then
Who's
is,
judging?
Is on shaky ground. Well,
are people judging?
Me, no, not in my personal experience, but for the joke, my consideration was... What? Where's the funny in it? And where's the cultural hypocrisy? Like, if there is judgment, I've heard it from, you know, I just could imagine one of my mother's MSW friends sort of hissing. But and it's not really a concern. But for the joke, I have to create a counter argument
mm-hmm.
and an argument so that I understand how to put the kind of variables together to make something humorous. Because the humor would be... She's dating
well,
the older
that's the
person
humor
who could
might,
be productive.
The humor might be that the people that look down on you have no leg to stand on.
That could be. That
and
could
that
be
and that's where the humor.
Well,
or you could be take the easy way and be like, do jokes about, so she's, you know,
yeah,
she wanted
yeah.
to go to Disneyland right, or something right, like right, that. Right. Well, you know, there's many people yeah. that have dated young women have jokes about where they just
say,
"Oh my, you know, my girlfriend, you know, you know, I had to go to her prom or something." I mean, those
yes,
kinds of jokes,
yes, of course.
Well, when I was 22, my boyfriend yeah. was, I don't know, probably 15 or so years yeah. older than I was, and when he always told me he felt like he was with a runaway.
Yeah,
that's half the fun.
Well, yeah. that because I also looked super young when I was.
Now there is there is the fetish aspect of it too. Right.
Well, I think that's sort of. I think that you know the morality of it all is really wrapped up in stuff like that, right? Like, look at Lolita. I mean,
that was a kid.
Right, but right.
That was a pre-adolescent child.
Right, but again, that trope okay. is repeated. I mean, 16, 22, you know, 17, 18, like the lines start to get blurred.
11 years old is a touch different. You know, once you hit 29 as a woman, you know, I mean, you start to form a personality, you know. And
29.
No, I don't mean that. I meant at 29, you could date, in theory, psychologically, a 60-year-old person.
Sure.
I don't know if there's a major emotional... what I'm saying is I met 29-year-olds that are absolutely as engaging and reasonably...
Of course.
...thinking about the world than the dopey, you know, older people.
Of course.
But yeah, on average, I think, you know...
But I think that's where the judgment comes
right.
from.
Right, yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, it's...
I mean, listen, in Yemen, they're marrying 12-year-olds to 40-year-old men, so...
Well, you know, and then you have Mormon communities. I mean, you know, you can go to pretty extreme cultures and find a lot of examples. You know, maybe even Hollywood's one of them. But
for sure. But yeah. like 22 and 48 suddenly doesn't seem that outrageous.
Well, listen, it's a big hop, you know. And then there's the two individual people, and you know whether or not you know when she's been in therapy since she was 15 years old, and we lost our father at the same. Like there are these parallels that feel reasonable, and because if you develop some facility with like therapy language, it makes it easier to communicate in a way that I don't
but you,
miss the years.
You're not getting
way.
Any sort of sexual charge out of the age difference.
Of course not. Certainly not.
You know,
no,
there was a young...
Genetically, there's no getting around, you know, you're drawn to anything. A childbearing age, you know, there's a reason why, you know, we have mores, societal mores that aren't just contingent upon what we're attracted to, what we're not, but what is morally appropriate. Because everybody's attracted to young. You can look up porn data and see where, you know, it's they're not all heading in the direction of women that are 58 and older.
Not that you have.
Not, of course not. No, never.
Well, there's a reason Barely Legal is a category.
I did have an old laptop that I've looked around on a bit.
There's a reason Barely Legal is a category.
It's a category. And there's a.
Well, then again, so is MILF, so is, you know.
No. They have many categories, yeah. But the most popular ones are not. Are not many of the other groups.
Right, but that's also because girls are sexualized in our society,
oh, yes,
right?
Course, yes.
I mean,
well, but they're sexualized for a reason. They're sexualized
right,
because people find them sexy.
No, because we live in a patriarchal society. That's why.
That's part of it, but it's pretty universal, the relative sexualization. I mean, the reason in Muslim countries everybody wears, you know, a burqa and the religious ones is because we know that we would sexualize them had they not been wearing a burqa.
Right, but the men don't have, well, I mean, the men don't have to dress like that.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not arguing that it's patriarchal. I'm just saying it's hard to get around a universal sexualization, I think. Is there any culture that doesn't?
Yeah.
There's ones that are less.
Yeah, I think there are ones that are probably less, but I think the world is a fucking patriarchy. Yeah. I mean, there's rape culture that's
I don't want to get there.
Well, I mean, listen, you can't talk about fucking young girls without talking about the culture that's sexualized. Like,
there's a reason the cultures are the way they are.
Right.
The culture is laid over the substrate of human biology.
No, it's a power dynamic.
Well, but they're both inclusive of one another.
Relating just slightly off topic, but still relating to the generation gap, I wanted to ask Nicole briefly. Don't worry, Nicole. This is a one word answer. Do you know? Have you heard of Hogan's Heroes?
I have not.
Oh, I had a joke that incorporated Hogan's Heroes, and I was worried I would lose the younger people.
I think you are going to miss that.
I reconstructed the joke.
Okay.
And maybe it'll work the way I reconstructed.
What's Hogan's Heroes?
I got to think you're going to lose them.
Hogan's Heroes is a show from the 1960s, but it's still available on...
You just lost Periel.
It's still... Yeah, if I'm losing... Yeah, I mean, she's...
But that's what I mean.
I mean...
I'm a little bit
You know, she's
younger.
Not Sweet 16.
but that's my point. Is
yeah,
that
so if I'm losing Periel...
Down,
yeah, if I'm losing Periel, I'm losing...
It's a big, thick part of your
demographic. Right. Yeah, I mean, the cruise ships, it might kill.
Of course. By all means.
Hogan's Heroes was a TV show from the 1960s that played in syndication. I didn't watch it in the 60s. I'm not quite that old, but it played in syndication.
Right.
I used to watch it in college. Lord knows I wasn't doing anything else. you know, I watched, yeah, so it's a show about a Nazi prison camp, and it's like, or a technically it was a Luftwaffe prison camp. I don't know if they were really Nazis or not, but
yeah,
be that as it may, it was buffoonish Germans running a prison camp with American and British and French soldiers, and it was farcical.
Okay.
And it was kind of ridiculous because...
But where are you going with the explanation?
I asked what it was.
Right, so I'll leave it at that. I do want
to
say one more thing, if I may, relating to that, which is that I do also think that women are, generally speaking, more mature than men.
Especially ones that stopped drinking, got into therapy really young to deal with their own shit.
Probably.
I mean, you're right.
Probably. Because when I was 30, there was this... super hot 23-year-old guy who was a model in New York City who was just obsessed with me, and I finally gave in and hung out with him, and he was the sweetest guy ever. He really was, and he was gorgeous, and I just couldn't tolerate having a fucking conversation with him.
Yep.
So there is that, too.
Oh, yeah. Listen, if you can't get over that, like, if that's there, that's part of it. That's going to be a problem for both people. That's not a moral problem. That's a personality or generational problem. No, he did not mind. didn't mind at all. He was learning so much.
Well, because he was because
so
he,
much.
Was,
he was exploring
he was
so many
learning.
Things.
He was learning, but you were, you know, so for him, it was all upside.
Right, I guess so.
You know, in that sense.
I also didn't grow up with TV, so I don't have a lot. I don't have a lexicon of references that I need to place time and space. You know, my mother was like, "Come," you know. There were no. I didn't grow up with the pop culture kind of sense of phenomenon.
Right.
But the other thing that I thought maybe was funny, and maybe you mind it for a joke, was we started watching Braveheart. This is a generational thing. Like, she wasn't really sure who Mel Gibson was, and but apart from that, I realized in Braveheart that guy's like 45. You see, you remember
in Braveheart.
In Braveheart,
he's 45,
and he's pulling riding around on a horse with no shirt. He's pulling up to ask if he can take somebody out on a date. One, the life expectancy was like 38, 500 years ago. This guy's 45 with no shirt.
What was he
just getting married for the first time?
Was his age in the movie 45? You're saying Mel Gibson in real life was 45?
Mel Gibson in real life,
but in the movie, whatever, he was probably
19. Was he? I mean, the guy's 45-year-old actor, and he looks it. And he's running around on a horse, and I just thought it was ironic that 500 years ago, and he's it was the girl. Girl was like, he had to ask her parents for the right to take her on a date. And it's like, you know, if you weren't married by the time you were 25, you know, in Scotland 500 years ago, you were, you know, and that guy's 20 years past. 45 then is like 75 now. Anyway, it's a Braveheart observation. I got to get more into Scottish, 14th century Scottish movie references.
Yeah, the 90s for her was like the 60s for us, right?
Yeah, yeah, but it hasn't...
Which is crazy to think about.
Yeah, sure. Sure it is.
Look,
yeah.
Things show up on my Facebook feed that says, first of all, how do you shut that down? Because like my Facebook feed will say, like, Dan, this is 9 years ago, this happened. And they'll show a picture of something that I could swear happened last January. You know, I mean, so you could probably turn that off, but it's very upsetting.
I don't go on the book.
But it, you know, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're
You
talking.
Know, hey Dan, 5 years ago, and shows a picture, and you're yeah. like, what? This was fucking 5 years ago. You have got to be kidding me, because you project that into the future, and if that the 5 years or the 10 years happen that quickly,
right? It's scary. Then, you don't need that feed in your life.
I need to. You know, it's
no, it's then, the opposite of getting an endorphin bump from some social media post. You know, with a bunch of likes. That feed is the opposite.
I gotta shut that off.
You have that in real time when you have a kid.
Yes, you do.
You're like, what the
fuck? Yeah, that's your Facebook feed right in front of you.
Every second of every day. Yeah,
yes.
And for him, the years are just going by like molasses.
Correct.
Well, at that age.
Molasses, so slow, so sweet, so slow.
So sweet.
Yeah. I did want to discuss, we discussed it last week, but it's worth revisiting, is Bob Saget, who died at 65. You know, 2 weeks ago, I guess it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think for people listening, I mean, Saget occupied this space where he was a guy who had a magnanimous kind of spirit, universally, you know, kind of experienced as such. And he was a guy that had a lot of life, was engaged by comedy, and really enjoyed it and the people around him and doing shows. There wasn't that... You know, sometimes with an older comedian who's got some dangerous, dark ennui going on, this death, for those of you who aren't familiar with the French term ennui.
I was
going
to say, nice use of the term ennui.
Of course, oui, death of the spirit. But anyway, he was the last guy you would think, 65 years old notwithstanding, like Dan said, it's perhaps not quite young, but he had the kind of life in his eyes that you do not expect to hear that he passed away in a motel room, in a hotel rather. Not he didn't.
I believe it was the Ritz.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a heroin addict in a motel. Yeah, of course, no. Yeah,
I read he lost something I didn't know. I read he lost both his sisters.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Which
know
is no, I didn't pretty know. Horrifying.
Horrible. You know? Yeah.
I also read that he started working for the Scleroderma Foundation before his sister was diagnosed.
Wow.
Which I mean, incredible.
That's a utterly bizarre coincidence, if true. Yeah.
Would you like me to verify that?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I would.
They don't. They're never sure if they want me to, because I don't know if it bothers them more when I'm right or when I'm wrong.
Well, trust but verify. I'm not saying you're wrong.
It makes for a good show dynamic.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying you're telling me that he started volunteering for scleroderma, but what prompted him, unless there was another... It could be that it's genetic and there was another relative that had scleroderma.
No.
Yeah.
But that's a bizarre thing to volunteer for.
It's very... Yeah. I mean,
if I was going to volunteer for something...
Yeah.
Well,
one would imagine he had a family member.
I think it's likely there was some connection.
Jeff Ross posted about this. He also died, I think, on his sister's birthday, Bob did. Uh-huh. There's a whole thing. Jeff wrote all about it. Bro, hang on.
Well, okay, but Jeff, I don't. That to me is not a primary
source. Okay,
material, fair enough. Source material that matters.
I mean, if you handed in a university paper and it said footnote one, the roast master, then you wouldn't get credit
but
for that.
But they were they were best friends.
I understand that, but it does. You all have to admit it sounds a little bizarre.
I do.
That he would... Scleroderma, by the way, is what killed the great Lucien Hold.
What is...
Who was...
I know it's a type of cancer.
No, it's not cancer. It's a skin disease, but it affects like the arteries too, and it's a bizarre thing. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but...
But isn't it the kind of... Well, I mean, do we know what happened to Saget? Do you know what the cause of death actually was?
No. I just Googled it, and they're still, for some reason, they still don't have the final diagnosis.
Because when it's that sudden, something like scleroderma, I mean, you would know.
No, it's not scleroderma.
Over
it wasn't
time.
Scleroderma.
You know, heart attack is the one that...
Yeah, heart attack or stroke are the leading candidates.
Yeah.
Quote.
This is quote from the Roastmaster, though.
No, this is quote from Bob.
Okay, go.
I became familiar with scleroderma several years before my sister came down with it. It began 25 years ago when I met Sharon Monsky, a woman who was to become one of the dearest friends of my life. She was the founder and then CEO of the Scleroderma Research Foundation, a great mother, a woman of three who'd been stricken with the disease herself as a young mom. Anyway, you can read the whole thing if you're interested.
Okay, I will accept that source.
Okay.
I will accept that source. But you understand, Peril, I have to verify.
You can.
I have a grave responsibility.
It's a grave.
Do you understand that I cannot take the chance of misinformation and then, God forbid, something tragic happens.
Listen, I have no problem because proving you wrong and both you and Noam wrong over and over and over again.
I don't
again.
Think that's what happens generally. and you're not proving me wrong because I never said, Periel, that is incorrect. I said that sounds a little bit...
that sounds real dicey.
It sounds dicey, as I think you would agree. And I have a responsibility.
Yeah, okay.
To the people! To the people!
It does sound a little questionable.
So I had to verify that. So you can't just say, you know...
Dan is the Walter Cronkite of the Comedy Cellar. We all rely on him for truth and balanced information.
You understand. If your son comes home and says, Mommy... you know, I don't know. Try to come up with an example, but
yeah, of course.
Mommy, I have I need I need this particular medication because I have this particular disease. You'd say, you know, I Googled it and I diagnosed myself with. You'd say, well, let's go to the doctor. Let's go.
Are you the doctor in this scenario?
I'm saying you can't just take people's
the
word
young
for
woman?
Shit when
He's
you
the physician.
when there's things at stake, and what's at stake here is my reputation as a podcast journalist.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
And speaking of which, Joe Rogan has gotten some blowback because of some of the things that he said in his show regarding COVID and vaccines, and now that people sign this long letter or whatever, like 150 science people or whatever, saying that Spotify should, I don't know what they want Spotify to pull them off the air, give them an ultimatum and tell them.
An ultimatum?
That's right, an ultimatum.
That's right, baby. Play on the ultimatum.
And say you gotta stop this shit, but that brings up questions of free speech, even though free speech, as we know it as a constitutional concept, is about the government. But as a wider concept about,
Well, aren't they saying that he's spreading misinformation? Isn't
about
that...
monoclonal antibodies and
well, he may well be spreading
kind of thing.
He might well be spreading misinformation.
But you're saying that's fine.
I'm saying, I don't know if I'm saying that's fine. I'm saying, you know, how much do you want people to monitor what everybody's saying?
I don't know. You just took me to task about Bob Saget's scleroderma.
But I'm not saying you shouldn't have said it. I'm saying it's my responsibility to clarify.
Okay.
Caveat emptor, I think, is the best way to handle these types of things. I think that...
Remind the folks at home what
that means. Well, that means buyer beware, but... In this case, listener beware.
Yes, of course.
And I think that we should educate people to be skeptical.
Of course.
To listen and to verify.
You know, on that note, and perhaps even more interesting than this, I was reading the latest Gladwell book, I mean, as it relates to these things, and we are inclined to believe people when, in fact, and they were analyzing the Bernie Madoff scandal and breaking down what happened.
Yeah.
We're inclined to believe people because evolutionarily, it's more metabolically responsible to group information if I believe you. If I don't believe you, I have to underwrite or deconstruct each individual instance of communication from each individual, which would be an impossible way to run a society.
And to live your life, right?
Right.
If you didn't believe... I mean, there's been
and
ample...
And that's why we're so fooled.
Right.
But look...
Because we're emotionally... We are set up evolutionarily to believe.
Well, there's been ample evidence that if you... people follow signs.
Yes.
Like if you...
That's right. Regardless of whether or not it makes any sense to follow them.
Yep.
Well, it depends. If the sign is on paper and written in crayon, I'm less likely... less likely to follow it than if it's a big green sign on the highway that says "This exit to great adventure."
More likely, if I'm
in fact looking to go to great adventure, to get off at that particular exit. 7A, by the way.
It is 7A,
and has always
Jersey Turnpike has always been buried. Nothing better.
Curb your dog. Don't feed the squirrel.
I was having this argument last night with a friend of mine who will go nameless because everybody knows him, and he's talking about. He's
Dove?
Like, no.
Yeah.
He's just ranting about how the lockdowns were bullshit and these people should be, you know, brought up on charges. And it's like, you know, the lockdown might prove to have been maybe not the best move. I don't know. Right. But you have to go with the information that you have. And
it's all context.
And you might turn out to be wrong.
Right, but it's whether or not you're having been wrong is looked upon as a lie or something egregious should be contingent upon the context in which the decision was made.
If the decision is made in good faith.
In good faith.
And
caveat emptor, if you will.
Well, I don't know if
really.
That has to do with caveat
emptor. Well, the believer beware. you know,
but
I mean,
people like if, yeah. the, if the decision turns out to be wrong to have gone into lockdown, then people say that put Fauci in jail, or you know, he's responsible for the suicides that took place because people were depressed. Right. No, if it was a good faith decision based on all the evidence that we had at that time,
of course.
You know, but I mean, because from what I've read there.
When an investment goes south, you don't put the CEO in jail unless there was fraud. If he were acting in good faith and got beat by the market for whatever reason, I think perhaps that's a more reasonable analogy.
Well, I think people have a lot of trauma, right, about all of this stuff. And so they're not really.
They're emotional.
Yeah. But also the thing that surprises me is that, like, don't people understand that these people are scientists? Yeah. Like, they're reacting as they get the information, and the information changes, I mean, constantly.
Yeah, and it feels like the default position should be that if you're a scientist, you are acting in good faith. Whether or not you are wrong will be a determination made in the future, because we don't know yet.
Right, right.
And if we choose to to be inclined towards skepticism around science, then we're going to be questioning everything that would have been good for us. You know, it's like you have to be a skeptic to a degree, but you also have to lean into the unknown to a degree and hope that the person telling you, you know, I don't know. Listen, be skeptical, but also don't be crazy.
You know, yes, I mean, and know that there are people that know more than you. And that's oftentimes you have to rely on them. If I take my car to the mechanic, I've got to trust that he knows how to fix that car.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to second guess him because I don't know anything about cars.
Right. The problem is that people don't read anymore. They don't think critically. That people are like fully getting their information from Facebook.
But I don't know that people were any better 20 years ago.
But the algorithms are better now. You're right. Human nature hasn't been better for thousands of years. People have been making the same mistakes, you know. I mean, if you track markets and market cycles and booms and busts, it's all human emotionality and psychology. Nothing's changed. The tulip bubble in the 1700s, nothing's changed. But the algorithms have changed. The ability to divide people at scale has been altered tremendously through technology.
And that's very manipulative.
Oh,
right.
Deeply.
I mean, you're taking advantage intentionally in order to attain a really sort of
it's market in order to change bottom line. The reason Facebook's one of the most valuable companies in the world is because they're able to garner the interest of billions of people. And the way they do that is by drawing your eyeballs. And any service you don't pay for, you're the product.
Correct.
And so those algorithms, that's what's so scary about AI, and, you know, without going into
what's
the singularity.
What's that film, that documentary about social experiment?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it sounds like The Social Network, but it's it's not. It's like, by the way, Dove, you haven't gotten COVID yet, have you?
Well, no, not that I know of, but my theory, my working thesis is that I have had it. And that I didn't test for it because I wasn't traveling anywhere. I mean, if I got the sniffles, listen, if you have it big time, if I got this, I've been, you know, sniffly, head coldy for several times, but I didn't run out, you know.
But I think if you had COVID, I mean, it's quite possible you
didn't run out and get
quite possibly you did.
I got tested when I went to Aruba, and I got tested when I went to my brother's house for a Thanksgiving thing. So I got tested I had to protect being around groups of people. But other than that, I was, you know.
I mean, it's possible you've been one of the few people that have been able to, you know, kind of move between the raindrops.
Possibly. Or I had it, and now I'm particularly resilient. I'm vaxxed, and I've had it, but didn't know it kind of demographic, you know.
Is this thing over
soon?
Is
what thing over? Well, you're asking us?
Yeah.
Yes.
Spain says yes. Spain says it's over.
The next iteration will be
like a flu. At some point, you got to go, listen.
Noam sent around an email.
Today.
Did you get Noam's email? Were you on his email?
I didn't see it. No.
About some Twitter thread by some guy. I don't know who this guy is. But basically, he's saying it's over. That Omicron is...
Signed the roast master.
Right. the roast master. Omicron is the symptoms are relatively light. The vaccines are very good.
And does anybody know anybody who's been vaxxed, gotten Omicron, and ended up in the hospital? I haven't heard about
I'm
one
not sure
person. I've heard about a lot of
Andre
people.
Andre Leontali died today.
Who did?
Andre Leontali.
Of COVID?
Yeah, of complications from COVID.
Who was Andre Leontali?
He was, I don't remember, I was the creative director.
Were there underlying health issues?
I mean, he was a major force in the fashion industry. Huge.
But what was his age and health
condition? He was 73.
Okay, that's the answer. When you're 73, you can die from the flu. I mean, it's from what I understand, you know, very few people. As a percentage of the
Well, I think very
Omicron.
Few people that got Omicron, whether vaxxed or not, wound up in the hospital. But of those that wound up in the hospital, most were unvaxxed.
Right.
Perhaps,
that's
but
true.
Almost
that's
no one is done.
Power. You don't know who that is?
No. I'm not in the fashion.
Well, he's heavy and in his 70s. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot if you've got some
underlying
condition.
Was he vaxxed or unvaxxed?
I'm assuming.
Or,
I mean,
or
maybe
it doesn't say.
I haven't gotten that far yet.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not in the fashion industry. I don't think it's like... I'm not in, like, the painting industry either, but I know who Picasso was.
Yeah.
I don't know that. Nicole, you ever hear this dude? What's his name again?
André Léon Talley.
Nicole, any have you ever heard of André Léon Talley?
Not until today.
All right. Yeah. And Dove hadn't heard of him.
Well, I don't know anything.
And I haven't heard of him. So
well, then he must not be important.
No. Well, your analogy to Picasso, I think, is...
Okay, that might be a reach, but...
A tortured analogy.
Do you know who Anna Wintour is?
Yeah, I've heard of her.
I do as well.
Okay, yeah, so yeah. He
famous editor.
But if I hadn't heard of Anna Wintour, I don't think it would be scandalous.
A little bit would be.
And again, I wouldn't... Yeah, but Picasso is, you know...
Okay, Picasso was a reach, but...
A reach. Yeah. Now, I get it. You were trying to make a point, and oftentimes we...
Hyperbole is generally...
My spider sense tells me that André Léon Talley...
Huge. Hugely famous. Hugely influential.
In that business.
In the fashion industry.
But those that aren't in the business, I just... You know, like there's people that are...
On the cover of the New York Times today. I don't know.
People still read that? Yes, I mean, he's big in his business, in his field, but...
Every single news outlet's covering it.
An important man, to be sure, but I just don't think that he.
Important man to be.
If I haven't heard of him, Dove and Nicole is the young person that's got her finger on the pulse.
You
of
got
things.
Your demographics covered.
Now, if you had said Karl Lagerfeld,
okay,
then yeah,
okay,
sure, yeah,
you know, or Ralph Lifshitz Lauren,
yeah, Lifshitz.
CNN.
Yeah,
NPR,
I get it.
The
it's
Daily
all yeah, sure. I understand.
People.com.
Just saying. Point taken.
Okay,
but the fact that neither me nor Dove nor Nicole have heard of him.
It means nothing other than the fact that you guys haven't heard of him.
Well, it means that one has to wonder just how much of a household name he was outside of the fashion world.
Yes, of course.
And we can, when we go downstairs after, we can certainly ask people, but...
I don't think that would be a great use of time. But sounds relatively futile.
We can ask David Tell. Have you ever heard of André Léon Talley? Huh? and
of course.
So anyway, Dove, you are back on the road.
I'm gonna hit the road. I go to the city by the sea. And then what's it called, Sam?
It's by the bay.
By the bay, baby.
By the bay.
City by the bay.
Cobbs Comedy Club.
Yeah, Cobbs. Yeah, next month, Feb 18.
Now, 19. Do you enjoy the road?
Look, you know, I don't know. I'm parts of it, right? I mean, you don't want to be on the road every week. I mean, the air.
I don't want to be on the road any week.
Any week.
You don't?
No.
No.
Really?
Yes, really.
Yes, really. Yeah, no, the road can be challenging.
I want to be downstairs with a fucking plate of roast chicken.
Roast bird.
And a Cabernet.
So sweet. Okay. So
well,
sweet.
Then you're extraordinarily lucky that that's what you get to do most days.
Yes, that's the way to look at it.
Of course, that's the way to look at it.
But the point is a lot of people do love the road. Some people hate the road, and some people like Dove find they're sort of indifferent, I guess.
No, you know, I mean, it's context, right? If you haven't been out for a while and you're going to go do a gig that you think is going to be reasonably good and reasonably well run, and it's in a decent place where you like to walk around. There are enough elements that make it work.
I mean, Dove, for the
do I want to run to Duluth and tear into a bingo hall? No.
With all due respect to our many, first of all, our Duluth listeners are basically carrying this whole show.
I know.
No, without Duluth, we don't have a show.
You're right. I take that back. I'll issue an apology.
That is so funny.
Next week.
First of all, seriously, do you have any idea how magical and fucking lucky you are that you just said that? Like, can you garner that appreciation for your life?
He can't internalize it. He can conceptually understand what you're saying, but he can't internalize it. It's what makes him so funny, but it's his cross to bear.
right. Look at his expression. I see you like considering.
Interesting, yeah. And taking that's it into
cross,
consideration.
That's his cross to bear. But you know, the protagonist in his book would have the same challenge with it. I mean,
thank you for bringing up the book because, Dan. Dear listeners, you are not pulling your weight on the book. Ira Spiro Before COVID, available on Amazon. At a minimum, read the fucking free chapters you get on Kindle.
Ira Spiro COVID.
Don't go away from this because it's an important point.
Well, it is an important point. That's why you should go to Amazon.com and just read.
No, you're not going to get in. I've tried.
I understand.
I've tried
over the course of
20 years, Perry.
You are quite correct that you're saying I should be more grateful for the skills that I have.
Grateful? You should be, I mean, elated on a daily basis.
That's not human nature. Nobody's elated on a daily basis unless they're using heroin. I mean,
listen to me.
And even heroin will turn against you.
They're very deaf.
You get
it'll turn on you.
It'll turn on you. Quick.
You get to do your favorite thing at your favorite place almost daily for most of the days of your life. Do you know how fucking rare that is for people to be able to say?
But Dan's world view, it seems anchored in an aspect of his consciousness that is it is not communicating.
Look, I was sort of joking about the roast chicken. It really isn't, you know. I mean, I enjoy the roast chicken, but it would.
There's some truth.
Making light. I do enjoy the roast chicken, but that.
You'd be complaining if they took it off the menu. Let's start.
Well, they did, and I was. they put it back on. I don't know if it was due to my complaining or there was a general outcry. That was heard.
There was a time where they were doing construction in the kitchen, and Dan was so enraged about 5 months, the construction was taking too long, and they were doing a podcast with somebody who had, I think maybe it was Kaplan, somebody who had won a Nobel Prize, or you know, his group, and they're getting into the aspect that this, you know, esteemed guest knew a great deal about, and Dan just got on, Dan just turned to the micro and he goes, I cannot take another panini. and the show just became about Dan's rage associated with the fact that the kitchen is only producing paninis.
Well, those were remember those dark days.
Very dark. You were 100% right.
Noam was redoing the kitchen, and it took, I don't know how
I felt
long.
The Nobel Prize winner also had a point of view, but yes, you were right about...
I don't know if it was Nobel Prize, but I had the point taken.
No, yeah.
But Noam took forever to redo this kitchen, and the only thing available were paninis.
Yeah. I should have added that. It's been a year since I told that.
That's probably 5-6 years ago that happened. So Noam rebuilt this kitchen because
it's like a Facebook feed. It feels like yesterday.
Yes. His plan was to really, really step up the menu here. Take it to another level. Uh-huh. And it doesn't seem as though that's happened necessarily. I mean, to an extent, we've added the steak is good and the roast chicken, but I was expecting more.
Really?
I was expecting a real out-of-this-world dining experience.
Yeah.
You know, the thing for me is I miss out on most of it because I don't eat meat, so there's really nothing for me to eat on the menu.
The Middle Eastern plate's pretty good.
Yeah, but I can't eat all that fried stuff.
No, the Middle Eastern plate has no fried stuff.
I'm trying, you know, speaking of like jokes and, you know, deconstructing jokes, I have been toying with the idea of a joke about meat eating. You know, a lot of people talk about vegetarianism. It's a very common theme in stand-up.
Yes.
But they usually take the position like, you know, they make fun of vegetarians.
Okay.
Whereas I want to do jokes about my own struggle, whereas I know morally the vegetarians are correct. It's hard to argue otherwise.
That's the take to make was doing 20 years ago talking about if you get your hands on a steak, eat that. Like it's been done.
The other way.
Been done the other way. But to do, because we all feel that. That's the contemporary experience that nobody's explored that I haven't heard you.
I don't know that everybody has that feeling,
but
I think
a
lot of
people can relate to it because we all love a burg. And then, but you go, there is a heightened sense that these are sentient beings that are being consumed. And especially in the face of these approximated products like protein, you know. Anyway, it's a rich area because we can all relate to it and people have not done it well
but
yet.
But like the only real moral case I can make for eating meat is that it makes my life far more pleasurable. And that's right. That's of some value if every, you know, I mean, it's not nothing.
Well, so, I mean, pedophiles could argue that
they could, and I would listen to their argument. I would dismiss it because I think that it's outweighed by the.
Right.
Well, the cows would argue.
They would, and they have a hell of an argument. They would have a hell of an argument.
That's really good, though. Maybe
you know,
Peter Singer is the guy.
We had him on the show.
We did.
Yeah, I love Peter Singer. Yes, we had. I was so excited.
I read his book. Yeah.
Oh
well, Peter Singer. Refresh my memory.
They didn't know who he was. I was like, this guy is one of the most important ethicist philosophers alive, and of course, yes, you were there.
Okay.
He's a professor at Princeton. He's written...
And he's a vegetarian.
Yes.
Or a vegan.
No, I don't know if he's a vegan, but he's written extensively on animal rights.
But from a real philosopher's POV, he really goes deeply into a nuanced argument around the moral case against consuming animals.
Correct.
Based on it being... If the notion is that it's a sentient being, and you go, well, you know, but it's an animal, and so it's a lower sentient being than me, equivocates or he correlates the intelligence of a pig and that of a
3-year-old.
And based on the data, it is not a significant differential. And so if you're going to make the argument for the ability to eat somebody based on a lesser intelligence,
then eat a 3-year-old.
Then one has to get pretty dark in their considerations if you're going to make a moral argument for consuming the animal.
That's a funny joke to talk about eating a 3-year-old.
Yeah, relative to a pig because of the similar intelligence levels. Yeah.
That's good. Like, yeah. After this, you're going to help me work out my joke about a tampon.
There you go. The moral equivalency of eating a 3. Singer's a badass.
He was amazing. I was so excited.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Dan doesn't
remember. I mean, to quote the great Celine Dion, it's all coming back to me now.
We had him on over Zoom.
Yeah, we've had, well, especially over the pandemic, we had a lot of these kinds of people on.
Dan has a very interesting life, but he can't.
He does? I do. My life's not that interesting. I get up, I go to the gym, steam.
Steam. Such a steam.
I sit in the steam room for longer than any, probably I have the club, I'm sure I have the club, right?
Future generations will look at his steam as perhaps not beaten for the next 100 years.
I mean, the people that work there must be thinking, who the fuck is this guy?
This guy can steam.
They know, I mean, they see you every day, though, practically.
Well, not every day, but when they see me, and they go in that steam room, and I don't come out. and like, well, he didn't come out at the end of my shift. Did he come out at the end of your shift?
How long?
They're getting together after the fucking work. I not see him after my shift.
I
work from 3 to 6.
Maybe he did. Maybe he did.
He's still in this. You're not supposed he's still in there.
Bob Saget.
Because they're all Spanish to work. Anyway.
I picked up on that. That's a funny.
You go in at 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
I shift ends at 7:30.
Five half hour. Steam. Nobody. Steam. Five.
I Google him.
I Googled him.
He did a David Letterman show back in 2000.
What accent is this?
No, I don't know.
Look,
generated.
There's a reason that I don't do voices and characters on stage.
No,
I stick to the jokes as written.
But you do some good impressions.
I do. Well, I do. Okay,
you do an amazing Jackie Mason.
Not SNL impression.
Not amazing,
but good impression.
But it's okay. I do the basics.
Haven't we had
like Rodney Dangerfield? I'll tell you.
Decent Woody Allen. Yeah, good Dangerfield. Yeah.
Do it, please.
He could do a Tracy Morgan.
Do
it. Good.
Tracy Morgan. I do a little bit of Tracy. I heard the Pope quit. Todd's dog. You know Todd the dog with the Pope. Nah, that's not good.
It's not bad.
You know Todd the dog with the. Nah, I'm not getting it. Because he said he came up to me once, this was like years ago. Probably 4 years ago, and he just comes up to me out of nowhere. I'm standing there and he comes up to me, Tom's dog. This was after the Pope resigned or whatever. And he goes, the Pope quit. You know Tom's dog when the Pope quit. I missed Thursday night lineup. And that's what he said to me, and I didn't know what he was talking about. You know, like Simon is—he's talking about like shows.
Yeah, no, I know. It's a lot of non sequiturs with him. He's an odd bird.
And Jackie Mason.
Sometimes I can get into his rhythm, but I'm not very good. So you know, I'll tell you something. This person. This. Gentiles, you know, they drink, but the Jews, they eat.
That's a good Mason.
It's okay.
He had a joke. He said affirmative action. He said if a black maid should get to school with a lower score, a white able to
Jews should lower the
ball with a lower net.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't anyway, may he rest.
May he rest.
And his daughter, of course, Sheba was on our show. You know Sheba.
Well, I don't know her, but certainly I know of her.
There are a lot of second generation comedians out there.
Yeah.
Maybe Emerson, your son, will one day.
Let's hope not.
Take the mantle. Take the mantle.
Yeah, no. Let's hope. Let's hope he receives enough love, acceptance, and in what psychological circles they refer to as a holding period, enough sanity, grounded, warm sanity, that the buffer with which many humorists do not experience the world with, he will have.
Well, we certainly hope that for Emerson. You will be at Cobb's.
Cobb's, baby.
Cobb's by the Bay.
By the Bay.
On
it's a good spot. It's a good club in San Fran on February 18, 19.
And that's one show on and the 18th, one show on that day.
One and two, three shows in all.
Okay, one and two.
Friday one, Saturday.
That's two. What I prefer. Like,
yeah, me too.
I'll tell you what I prefer. Stay home and get a check. But if I have to do something, I'd rather just one. And
I'd rather do one.
I'd rather do one.
Forget
I don't like
end. Just because
there's something about that second show.
Yeah, yeah.
I
used to be three on Saturday night in some.
And the audience doesn't realize they're not getting the same show. No, they're getting the tired version of the show.
By show three, they're not getting even close.
They're not getting the same show.
Wait, you're doing one on Friday and one on Saturday?
If there is
two on Saturday.
Yeah, two
one
is
Friday,
two
Saturday.
Two.
But there used to be, I remember working Miami Improv. It was three shows every Saturday. And then, I don't know, there were several clubs. And I just remember hearing that and going, I have to go do the gig, but I really don't want to.
So the best show to go see is the first one?
I think it's always, you're the freshest.
Yeah.
I mean, the second one's probably okay.
Yeah, the second one sounds
but,
like
yeah, it, for an audience.
The third one's
okay.
Tough.
I'm just from a comedian perspective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hated it. And then from the audience perspective, they're getting less of a show on the third.
Well,
they're getting a tired show.
Yeah.
They're getting a tired show. Well,
no, in this case, there's no three or third show Saturday night. There's just two, and that's okay. They'll both get good shows and one show Friday. Not many clubs do three anymore.
Yeah, right, that's what I'm saying. You're doing one on Friday and two on Saturday.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
They used
to
be more of three show clubs, I think.
Yeah,
they'd work
you like a donkey in a field. Boy, three shows. Oh, my, a donkey?
And you can't phone this shit in.
Oh.
You can't phone stand up.
No, you can't phone stand up.
You have to be so present.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
I know.
You can't just be up there and like off somewhere and then the words are coming out of your mouth. You have to be very present.
Yeah.
That's why I forced myself to host all of these shows because I was so terrified to be on stage for so long that I was just like memorizing things.
Yep.
And it's like, you can't.
It's a good muscle. And then you can relax into the joke, which makes it funnier. Yeah.
It's made me much more comfortable on stage and much quicker and much less
on the verge
of a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, no, totally. And the more comfortable you get, it's another evolutionary thing. It's why when somebody's tense, even if the material's wonderful, the audience can't experience it as that funny because they're tight because the performer's tight. And it's so psychological.
Totally.
Yeah. Even if the material's spot on, you know, it's weird.
100%. Yeah. If it's really one of the things that I've really learned in this past year of being on stage is like, I have to be having fun.
We subconsciously experience that about one another. Nobody knows why they're getting tight and it's not funny because the math is that the joke is funny.
Yeah.
But it's that delivery. And it was so important for our evolution to intuit another person's tenseness because we were sensing whether or not they were telling the truth, whether or not there was danger. And now you can't laugh. It's odd how that's connected.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. It's real deep in us.
It is. Yeah, it is real, for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of deep, I have this itch. You know, you figure you wipe, and there's nothing left on the... And why is it still itchy?
You should be
itchy?
So clean. Why is it still itchy?
Oh, just, anyway.
You should see somebody about that.
Yes.
You might need some cortisone cream.
Perhaps.
You might have a hemorrhoid, a small one that you can't see.
Light rod.
Well, no, it doesn't happen all the time. It's just once in a while.
You got a rod.
No, but once in a while, there's itching even after what seems like a thorough. I'm sorry, Nicole.
Why are you sorry, Nicole? He fucking berated me about talking about my period once, and you're sitting here.
Oh,
that's
Lord,
disgusting.
Oh,
that's disgusting.
Because you render him unable to object.
Because I'm a man, and men are dirty and disgusting, whereas women are
yeah, little cherub. They're so
women
so clean.
Yeah, they're just
they don't do that sort of thing.
They don't do those sorts of things.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to us. We wish Noam a speedy recovery from, well, if assuming he's not well, but I don't think that's the case.
No,
he
probably just
didn't feel like coming.
Speedy recovery from having to wire money overnight to the Cayman Islands.
Dan Natterman, Iris Spear Before COVID, available on Amazon. Perry L. Ashenbrand, On My Knees. And The Only Bush I Trust Is My Own, available on Amazon. Dub Davidoff, Coming to a Town Near You.
You, baby. Road Dog.
Road Dogging it. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time on Live from the Table.